Cousins, Rail 6. We talked about your time with the headquarters squadron of 2nd 4th Fire Yeomanry at Bridlington area. And what about anything else you recall about that period?
Well, I had a very good friend who was joined the RAF. The RAF were training there at Bridlington, and a friend of mine who was actually lived next door to my wife, he came up for training, and I met him, and we went about together. But that was just by the way. I mean, it was just making him feel, because he was a little younger than me. He was in the 18s coming up for his RAF training. But that was one small thing there. But normally, life just went on the same, as an ordinary room office. There was nothing really nothing out of the ordinary. The tank regiments were doing their training. So there was a course. I got sent to Perth for 2 weeks.
What was that called?
That was on records, Perth, not just for knowing what happened to all the information that we sent up to brigade and went on and on and on until it reached the record office, either in London or, in this case, in Perth. And I was billeted in the Black Watch there, because I think their depot was in the Black Watch, and which was quite pleasant up there.
Now, I thought you were going to tell about leave.
Leave. And then all this time, I mean, I've been corresponding actually with my wife, having the odd telephone call, and she said, will you be able to come down? Anyway, out the blue came a telegram saying a daughter arrived, £8.5. Can I see you? So I went to my adjutant and said, look, my wife's just delivered. Can I have the weekend off, sir? And he looked at me, and he wasn't very keen. Now, the next adjutant would have let me have it straight away, but he always... Anyway, I'll give you a weekend pass. He said, but I don't like chaps leaving for these purposes. He said, I don't like them leaving the room. I said, all right. I said, but I would like to go. I said, this is my first child. Anyway, he gave me a pass, and I just remembered travelling up to Hull, getting another train, travelling down to St Pancras probably, crossing to Liverpool Street, going from Liverpool Street down to Woodbridge, etc., and seeing my wife, seeing my daughter for the weekend, and then travelling back and getting back in the Monday morning, I believe, I had to get back. But that was the only time I was able to ever get any compassionate leave at all. I mean, and that was that. And they weren't keen on giving compassion. There were too many compassionate leaves for silly things, and he'd rather, he quashed the whole thing if he could. But I managed to get it anyway, so I was happy. Next thing, I mean, it was what my daughter was born on the 23rd of October 1943, so that we do know where we are.
What happened there before you moved to Aldershot?
No, it was just going to the billiard hall, playing a bit of snooker, going to the dance hall at night and enjoying oneself in the evenings up to a point, and going about with the usual sergeants, chaps whom you knew. You got to know all the tank commanders, naturally, because they were all around you and things like that. But that was all. And just
what was the sergeant's mess like?
The sergeant's mess there was quite good. Quite good, nothing exceptional, but the food was reasonable. We didn't have the sergeant cook, of course. He was the sergeant cook for the officers, which, of course, he was a cordon bleu, actual real cook. But we didn't have real cooks like that. I mean, in the sergeant's mess, we had corporal cooks who cooked well, and the food was reasonable. But we supplemented them, of course, all the time. But by the local shops where we could, when we wanted another good meal. It was egg and chips everywhere and those type of things. And the next thing we knew was we were going to we're going down to Aldershot. And that is when life really started. I mean, I remember Aldershot going down there very well, because what happened to Aldershot? We drove all the way to Aldershot. That's right. We didn't go. We all our vehicles. We went the 200, 300 miles. I don't know. But anyway, we got to Aldershot and found our quite reasonable quarters in the Aldershot camp. Vast camp, as you know, and
in the barracks, right?
In the barracks, yes, into Aldershot barracks, and settled down. Had a good sergeant's mess there, of course. Had very nice there.
What was it like?
Well, we had a snooker room to begin with, which was even better. But the food was quite good, and it was run quite well by our corporal cooks, and food was good, but we still, again, could go out for meals. We used to go into Aldershot itself and go to the local do's on. One thing I do remember, there was a woman who was a striptease dancer, Phyllis Dixie. She was the most well-known striptease dancer of that age, and all our sergeants, we all went and sat in the front row and sat there for two shows, but that was entertainment for us, and so that was that. But and funnily enough, going up to Leeve, I did go up to Leeve to town for a couple of weeks to meet the wife, and I went travelled up in the train with her and Jack Plant, her manager husband, and had a chat with her, and I told her how the boys loved her act and all that, you know, as you would. But I went up. And enjoyed a couple of weeks leave up in town. I went down to Woodbridge a couple of times. My wife came up to Dundon, and we stayed at my parents', but it wasn't terribly good, but you know, the bombs were coming over, and I was in the heart of London. And she was happy to get down back to Suffolk, although, of course, they were getting bombs there, but not only on the air, only on the local airdromes. But anyway, Aldershot, I remember, because at Aldershot, we got there the beginning of May, because naturally I thought of cricket immediately, even though we were going to war, it was cricket. So I got the nets up, as soon as I got them up, and the chaps who were interested. It rained, and then it rained every day until the 31st of May. So we had no cricket practice at all. I remember that. It was the worst wet May. And this talk about invasion, as it was in June, when everybody was saying, oh, we don't know when it will be, and it's going to be in June. There was a lot of hearsay about that among the chaps. Nobody quite knew what was happening, of course. Oh, Montgomery came. Montgomery came, I remember that. He drove up in his big open staff car, as he always did, and with his two badges on his hat, and his lovely made-up blue eyes, and gave us the usual pep talk.
What sort of thing?
Well, men, we're approaching a big battle. You're shortly going to invade. We don't know where it will lead to. The Americans will be here, and the Canadians will be there, and that, and, you know, that sort of thing. And not frightened the life out of us, but generally made we realize that there was a war on. And but anyway, he spoke for a good half hour to us, and then went back to the officer's place with the senior officers in the barracks. But he came, he did that often, but that was the one time he came to us at Aldershot. And he had a whole of the men from all the regiments, all the way round, out in the fields, and the whole fields, and gave us this talk through microphone, and it was quite, I suppose it was very encouraging, and passed on a few of Winston Churchill's words and things of that nature. But he gave us a good talk. He gave us a good talk and made us realise that there was a lot of trouble in front of us, and that we weren't all going to come back from it. So that was the style, and I remember that quite well. I did see him once more, but that was later.
What did you think? Did you think highly of Montgomery then?
Well, we knew his background. We knew all about the Rommel business and all the Middle East and the chaps who come into our regiment who fought out there with the Desert Rats and those type of boys who come into our regiment. That was one thing he did insist upon. He had insisted upon getting our regiment filled with fighting troops, much the same as he did with the HLI, but he did that to us, and we got a lot of good chaps in, and tank commanders, senior officers. We had a senior officer, Major Nichols, who was liked by everybody, but was unfortunately was lost in battle and in Normandy, and we never heard of again. That was a Major Nichols. He was good. There was several other. There was a Major Gray, I believe. I still can't think of my adjutant at that time.
Now, a lot of the men were busy waterproofing. Would you have to waterproof your truck?
Yes, of course. Orderly room staff, waterproofing. What does that mean? Well, you're going over on landing barges and landing craft, and you'll go off the craft in 5 or 6 feet of more of water. So out came the powerful, the green slime, as we called it. Not that I was then orderly room. My sergeant, orderly room sergeant, had gone, and I was in charge. So I kept my driver IC, who was also one of the clerks, and a couple of the other chaps and the other drivers. They, in fact, all the drivers I see did the vehicles. And there was all this soaping down with this green mould or muck underneath the whole of the fabric of the underneath the cars, and which served its purpose. And I remember that quite well. Now,
what effect did being promoted to orderly room sergeant have?
Well, the fact that I didn't have to work quite so hard on all the part one and two orders, I just took the instructions. The adjutant would call me in and say, all yesterday's or this week's ACIs. We read them together, and they'd pick out relevant clauses, and they would go in part one orders to let the rest of the regiment know. He'd then give me the ACIs.
ACI standing for?
Pardon?
What did it stand? ACI.
Oh, sorry. Army Council Instructions. And he said, now look, he said, oh, there's all the officers' pay down there, Sergeant. He said, they're going to approach me and I'm going to send them round to you. And every officer, I think, that was 30 of them in my regiment, over the next few weeks, well, in May, something to do that was in May. I had to help them with their pay. It was class one, class two, class three, married officers with children, single officers, the best class to adopt, and things like that, and. But I was able to put them in the picture and tell them the best thing to do for their pay, and they all used to thank you. That's how, although I used to naturally have to be writing, I was still writing out this documentation to the officers every week. But you got to know them all personally, which was quite good. And then I did start the cricket, fortunately, on June the 1st. The nets went up, the summer came. Beautiful sunshine, and by the 6th, the day our tanks, the day we heard was D-Day, that they landed or gone over with the gliders, My chaps were ready in the tanks to move off to Gosport. And I captained a cricket team with Major Grant, it was in second in charge. Anyway, it was either Major Grant or Major Gray. He was second in charge of the echelon, anyway, with a rear echelon or second echelon. And I know I played a cricket against the remainder of the 15th, 19th of the Hussars. I think it's 15th, 19th of the Hussars. And played them a game of cricket that day, and which was quite enjoyable. And all we knew was that our tanks had gone. And we just were, when were we going? So then I think it was D9 that we started off. We got all our tanks, our vehicles loaded up, office truck loaded up, and down we went. It was quite a long trip, it seemed, to Gosport, because we went so slowly, naturally, because there was an awful lot of vehicles on the road from all different two roads coming in to Gosport. And all I remember with Gosport was arriving there and using our truck for sleeping that night, and then the troop carriers, or the flat-decked troop carriers, coming in at with the tide along the into the bay, but we were along by the docks there, and we all going on to. All being on our trucks, driving straight onto the troop carriers, and moving off, and that was D10 as far as I remember.
That would be the 16th.
Would that be the 16th? Probably, yes, about then.
About
15th, 16th, I think we landed. And
what do you remember the channel? Crossing the channel?
Channel was very calm, very nice. June was a marvellous month. From what I remember, in fact, that summer was marvellous. But anyway, I remember that very well. It was calm. Well, we went over. Where did we go over to? Being at Gosport, we went round and we were going into Cassell and wherever it was, the bay there, one of the bays in Normandy. So it was quite a long trip. I said, well, it'd be 120 miles. It wasn't just 20 miles across. It was 120. But it took that. We seemed to be well supported by cruisers. We could see the cruisers in, you know, around us. And no jerrys, no attack at all for the first few hours until the last hour when we approached the Normandy coast. And that by then, that was night. It was dark. The flares were going up, and we were very, very worried what we were going into, because they were dive bombing us. Anyway, dive bombing the convoys coming off the troop carriers.
Did they come anywhere near you?
Well, we had a few bombs drop near, but fortunately, nothing ever hit my particular boat. I saw other boats get hit. We were glad to come off the truck and onto dry sand. We went into six. The tide was well up, so we probably had to wait till it was dark and the tide came in. But we came in on the tide, so we came in quite easily. The trucks didn't let us down. We've collared in on convoy. Being bombed in the dark, with flares everywhere, tracer bullets everywhere, I remember all that, but none of our chaps, or my particular chaps, got hurt. And moving in under the 2IC for 2 or 3 miles inland. And always our RSM was with us. RSM came back, he'd been up the front in the truck, and he came back to the CI2IC and said, "Sir, Jerry's 100 yards up the road." So, reverse. And I think we were kind of got wiped out that particular, because we were going on and on with no inclination where our regiment was, where to find them. But I know we turned in the dark and we moved back a mile. And then RSM, all vehicles in the woods, in the surrounding fields, and dig. And that was our instructions.
That would be the Cully area, would it?
Yes, Cully, that's right, yes. And dig. And that was right. And dig till the morning, anyway. And then we'll find the 2nd, 5th, and 4th of Yeomanry tanks. And we did, or at least he did, with the 2IC. And we were in the truck that day in the open air, and plenty of activity. But there wasn't enough German planes by then to really warrant attacking everybody. They just couldn't. And but so I had a quiet life for a day or two there, and then we moved up slowly, not very far, I think another mile or so, into a field, dig again, and then that was when I started finding what it was like to be a soldier, because back came the RSM, adjutant wants you up the front line of tanks. So I said, thanks very much. So I got in a small truck and we drove up 2 miles, and jumping out every now and again into ditches with mortar bombs coming over. I mean, I used to remember that quite well. You could hear the noise, because I don't know whether they were normal bombs or mortar bombs, but they were able to, the range was there. And ducking down off the truck in front of the adjutant's tank and keeping on the right side while Jerry was pounding away, sending only probably another 100 yards the other side. And I mean, this was, and all our tanks were all along the line there, the whole regiment. And this I did every second day, backwards and forwards, for possibly 2 weeks.
Well, what were you doing when he got to the adjutant's tank?
Well, that's when he started giving me notes and found out I could do shorthand, because I wasn't going to write everything down, so I took notes with shorthand. And he said, oh, I suppose he must have said, you didn't tell me you could write shorthand. I said, well, I didn't think it. He said, well, it could have been useful. I said, well, anyway, I can handle it. And I used to take notes for part two orders. Even then, to go back, get them out in the truck, in the office truck, not necessarily under fire, 3 miles back we were, I suppose, and not being attacked. You know, the vehicles were all under grass, you know, in grass fields, under under trees, and we weren't worth worrying about. It was so, and that happened then until, what happened then? The next... we eventually made forward in our trucks to the plains of Caen, where we were still in a forest there, or well protected. But our tanks went into battle that day in Caen on the plains.
This would be Operation Goodwood on the 18th of July.
Yes, I think so. It must have been. And went into battle there, and we lost 150 of our tanks, I think. I don't know how many you got, but as far as I remember, an awful lot of our tanks were put out of action. The tank crews that could get out of their tanks did, and made straight for the gliders, because it was dusk. They got under the gliders, and the same evening overcame Jerry and bombed the gliders to hell, thinking they were a new load of planes had landed. And the terrible carnage that we had with all our chaps, or some of our chaps, eventually coming back and reporting that we'd lost possibly 250 men, or so, something like that, because all the company commanders had to, when they did move back a little bit, they had to send all the belongings back to the orderly room staff for us to sort, mainly headquarters staff, mainly headquarters squadron, but I mean, I think the companies did their own set, and all this business of seeing all the belongings, all the chaps that weren't coming back, and getting them back eventually. How they went back, I never realised, never thought about it, but all we did was get them all back, all put in the haversacks and the bags and away, and that was that, which was not very nice. And of course then having to print all the names eventually from the companies reporting to us, then you really became the orderly room sergeant. You really felt you were doing something, because you had all the names of the casualties, which you then had to even put in part two orders for brigade, and the dispatch rider would still come down from brigade and collected every few days what you could put on part two orders and the depletion of your regiment. And that was when, I think when that was Khan, then we took Khan, I believe, and moved on to Falaise. And then at Falaise, then again I was always on the fringe, naturally, there was a terrible battle went on at Khan, which of course all I could hear was the noise. It was pretty awful. But then we went on to the Falaise Gap, or the Falaise, whatever it was called. I think it was called the Falaise Gap. And they took Falaise.
So what would your daily routine be like during these periods, when you were moving forward through France?
Well, still going up to always see the colonel or the adjutant every 2 days in a truck. That's 3 or 4 miles that they were always in ahead. And getting his orders for the part one orders. We got a part one orders out probably once a week, I suppose, and the part two orders out as often as we could. But always sitting with the with the adjutant mainly, and listening to him telling us what had been happening, or telling me what had been happening as far as the battle was concerned and how far they were getting. But by then, of course, they were very much depleted. And brigade pulled them out at Falaise. They must have pulled them out. And we had a quiet time because it was this marvellous summer. And I know the lads in July and August, were still there. Before we went over the River Orne, the Orne was the next big drive, and we were still there, and I used to play football and cricket and mess about generally. I mean, we were all in our trunks and getting warm and brown and enjoying life for a week or two, as far as, the headquarters squadron was concerned, because we were back there. I mean, the tanks were on stands too, but they weren't in. They'd been withdrawn, I think, from brigade because they'd suffered this heavy loss. And that was the next thing, was crossing the Orne, I believe, in the flies and the stench and the stink, and making for Ypres. And Wipers, as everybody called it, but Ypres we went to, and that was quite good there.
Yeah, that's quite a jump, because they got to Ypres in December.
Oh, would it be? Oh, good, I'm glad you could tell me that. So
there's quite a lot of fighting in the pond. But, I mean, from the orderly room perspective, you know, it's different.
Oh, did I go to Holland? We went to Holland before Ypres, did we? Oh, good. Oh, yeah, I liked Holland, yes. I got mixed up there, didn't I? Ypres, I know. It was Ypres. That's right, we then went and got to Helmond, I remember. Helmond, didn't it?
So that's the next thing you remember after?
I remember, yes, going with the tanks, crossing the Orne. Oh, no, I remember going, we did quite a journey through Lille and places like that. Then we got into Belgium, of course, Bruges. But when I was up on the Pyrenees. That's right. I think we were on. Well, anyway, I know all our tanks and trucks we formed round Lourdes. Lourdes, the you know, the place where all the pilgrims go. And I remember that because I hadn't had a bath for months, and by then my sergeant interpreter had joined us, that is attached to me, who spoke five languages fluently. He came to us just after we got out of Normandy proper and got into the movement to Holland, but he joined us in France still.
Who was he?
That was Sergeant John, or Pierre, Peter, no, Peter, P-E-T-R-E, Peter, John, Sergeant.